Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Are you sure about that?
Yep.
Bill's out of whack here. One earmuff dead, microphone in the wrong place.
Yeah,
well. Are you all situated now?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm good to go.
So do you feel like you can talk about tractors just a little bit?
I think I can.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't want you to, you know, blow a hamstring or anything.
All right. Well, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they've got everything you could imagine in the way of John Deere. Go by and see them. They got mowers, tractors, attachments. They're also a steel power products dealer and a Honda generator dealer. They got lots of those in stock. Give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And? Happy St. Paddy's Day. Later this week.
Oh, I was going to say.
Midweek.
Is that why your mic cover's green?
It is, too. Oh, okay. It's really green.
I don't
know what's going on with it, but it's really green. There's probably some toxic chemical on it or something.
That's a hot green right there.
It is, too. Oh, my goodness. So, let's see. You can catch up with all of our archives and people we've had on before and topics we've had on before for the last 10 and a half years. Actually, it's been a pretty long time. You can find all that at We the People Radio. Bill.
.com.
Oh, it's .us.
Oh, dang it.
You're totally fired.
I'm totally fired.
See, I didn't do it last week, so I thought this week, yeah, I'll catch
yeah.
Bill's like Curly on City Slickers. Remember how Curly was the one, it was about the one thing? Bill was doing his one thing.
One thing. You're right.
I saw him, he was totally in the zone working on his little tablet. Gosh, we should call this the Aaron Teases Bill Show.com.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on that.
I know, we could.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because.
Yeah,
because I have a lot of practice there. But you know what? Being the oldest of five kids from an Irish Catholic family, what did we do professionally from the time we hit the ground?
Come out swinging.
We teased.
Oh, okay.
It's all about teasing. Teasing and name calling. And our mom was really nice, and all she ever said was, can't we all just get along? But, you know, it just never took. There were a lot of things we learned. That was not one of them. It just didn't work for any of us, actually. It was clean sweep. All five of us got away, and... we're all just a wee bit mean-spirited. My sister told me I was a name caller. I was like, don't be an idiot.
No one's happy until somebody's crying.
Oh, yeah, that's totally true, too.
Yep.
Actually, that's really super true. Even as grown-ups, it's awful. Yeah, we just always go too far. Wow. Good thing Dr. Pride knows us, or he'd be like, okay, I got to go. I forgot what time it was. I'm busy this week. Craziness. But I guess in the midst of the insanity, if you're not finding anything to amuse yourself, try name calling. It works out. It's kind of fun. And anymore, you're in trouble for everything anyway, so you might as well just do what you want. There's nothing you're going to say that's going to be acceptable anyway, so might as well pick things you like. So our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, he's the executive director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. Both are congressional advisory boards. And he served on the Congressional EMP Commission, which is why we gave him a break last week and the week before, because we really wanted to talk to him about what happened in Texas, because we knew he was all over it and saw him on TV a bunch, because obviously he's been telling them stuff like that was going to happen for a really long time, and he didn't listen. Bad news. So let's see. He was on the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission and the House Armed Services Committee. He was an intelligence officer in the CIA, and he was responsible for analyzing Soviet and Russian nuclear strategy. But see, outside of all that, and which makes him such a fun guest, is that he has a PhD in history and archaeology and another one in strategic studies, which is how he wound up in the CIA. And he's the author of numerous books. I would encourage you to read them, and we have linked them on the site. The Power and the Light is the most recent one. Subtitle is The Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America, 2001 to 2020. So it's, you know, all his stuff is super current. And then Apocalypse Unknown, that's a good coffee table book.
Yeah.
I think. Just,
who wouldn't,
you know,
pick that up?
Yeah, just for the title. The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. And honestly, if people don't even know what EMP stands for, You should smarten them up. Yeah. And we've listed the previous shows with him on here, and the archives don't cost you anything to listen to. Robert has graciously taken out the free enterprise moments, so the show is less than 2 hours, and do our best to make it as fun as we can, you know, in light of the topics.
And Dr. Pry also was on Sean Hannity here just not too many days ago. I heard him on the radio at, on Sean's radio show.
Of course.
Yeah.
Because all the stuff
he's everywhere.
He is everywhere. So, Dr. Pry, I bet this has been one of those told you so moments that you really didn't want to have, huh?
Well, Aaron Go Brah to you. Well,
see, there you go.
And happy St. Patrick's Day to you coming up on Wednesday, March 17th.
I married a Welshman, but I think everyone's forgiven me now.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm celebrating St. Paddy's Day today anyway.
Yes, St. Paddy's Day is just a great holiday. You know, it's kind of like going to Hawaii. You know, when you're Hawaii, they kind of treat you like everybody's Hawaiian. You know, St. Paddy's Day, we're kind of an inclusive bunch. Just go ahead and wear green, join in.
Yeah, join in. Drink some
don't talk
drink
crap
beer,
about our beer or our Irish whiskey. You'll be fine.
I agree. And Apocalypse Unknown would make it good. A good display book on somebody's on somebody's the coffee table it has a beautiful big picture on the front cover of a coronal mass ejection, an actual coronal mass ejection coming out of the sun, and a huge beautiful glorious picture of the sun with this huge coronal mass ejection spewing out, which is a real thing. It's not an artist's conception, because it's only recently that we've been able to photograph them, you know, only within the past 5 years when we put up satellites. And it's got inset in it a little blue dot, which represents the size of the Earth relative to one of these coronal mass ejections. Just by looking at the front cover, you can immediately appreciate, I think, the magnitude of the problem when you see how enormous these coronal mass ejections are compared to the Earth, and that when that thing eventually hits us, that it's going to ruin everybody's whole day. But fortunately, something short of that happened in Texas, but just an ice storm.
Yeah.
Not a geomagnetic superstorm, just an ice storm. And while ice storms of that severity are rare in Texas, you know, they do happen once every 25 to 50 years. And contrary to the Biden administration, Texas's vulnerability to this ice storm was not a consequence of climate change. You know, the climate isn't changing in the way that the Biden administration and the true believers think it is, such that we are going to end up having an environmental catastrophe in 10 or 12 years unless we embrace socialism and replace our current means of getting electricity with things like windmills and solar panels. You know, their solution, that's supposed to save us from the myth of climate change. And yet, they haven't explained yet if those things are supposed to be the answer, how come they weren't the answer in Texas? You know, because the first thing that failed, and the things that failed the most, were the windmills and the solar panels. You know, the sources of electricity that were least affected are the ones that are least popular. Nuclear power, nuclear energy, and coal-fired power plants. They're the ones that chiefly kept the lights on in Texas through the severe ice storm. And Texas shouldn't have had a significant problem if it weren't for politics. It wouldn't have had a significant problem. The Texas, what we may remember in the future is the Great Texas Blackout of 2021. It'll probably be remembered that way, should be remembered that way. I think the death toll is up to 100 now, maybe over that, as the number of people who froze to death as a consequence of the lights going out during these freezing temperatures. The cause of this was not climate change, but politics, as it usually is. And you know, the EMP Commission, which I served as the chief of staff for 17 years, warned back in 2017 that the current institutional arrangements we have for providing for public safety and national security to keep our electric grid going are inadequate. You know, they're not competent. They're inadequate to the problem. You know, I'm reluctant to actually start getting into the details because I don't want people's eyes to glaze over and start turning off their radios. But
well, except that people should know when they see things like that, they should know that those are, you know, canary in the coal mine moments, actually.
Yeah.
We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Peter Benitz-Pry. We have to take our first break here. You are listening to We the People, and you can join us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Good job.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over but good. They want you all body and soul, then it's just your body, then they go. What shall we do about them?
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
There you go. I don't know if it's good, guaranteed to blow your head apart. That's probably not good. But anymore, all you have to do is turn on the TV.
Yeah, that's kind of commonplace nowadays.
Yeah, or the radio. Head's going to blow apart. So, Dr. Pry, just out of curiosity, do you have any idea why this topic doesn't seem to be something that... This just seems so far-fetched that people have a hard time believing it's real.
Could you repeat the question? Why?
I mean, I guess I'm always kind of every time we talk to you, all of the information makes perfect sense. We see the thing in Texas. I think all of us, except the, you know, the climate change groupies, figured out that this was caused by bad planning. Obviously, if you run out of power just because it gets cold, and I'm curious to know why you think, or maybe you guys have discovered a little bit why the power grid doesn't really hold much more sway with people.
Well, not sure that it's true that it doesn't.
That's
the
good.
The political process, when you consider how few of us there are on the side, well, I shouldn't say how few of us, because I do think that, you know, that there are many Americans out there, I hear from them all the time, you know, who do care about securing the power grid and protecting it and understand that. A lot of this is evidenced in my book, Blackout Wars, that has the story of efforts by state representatives and senators to get their grids protected in various states, you know, Maine, Arizona, California, North and South Carolina, Alaska, California, and Texas even. You know, even in California, a bill was passed demanding that the recommendations of the EMP Commission be implemented, that the California delegation take that position in front of the U.S. Congress. Unfortunately, the state of California itself, you know, hasn't done anything. In fact, their situation is they're among the most vulnerable states. As we speak, Senator Bob Hall on Friday in Texas is again introducing another bill, you know, to try to get the Texas grid protected. President Trump passed an executive order back in 2019 to implement the recommendations of the EMP Commission and get not only the electric grid protected, but all the life-sustaining critical infrastructures. Congress unanimously, Republicans and Democrats, I think it's the first time in history it ever happened, but they included a provision, an annex to the most important bill Congress passes. It's called the National Defense Authorization Act that funds the Pentagon. And this provision said, yes, we in Congress unanimously agree with President Trump's EMP executive order, and we are codifying it into law. so that it will have not only the weight of an executive order, but it is incumbent upon you, U.S. government, legally to implement it and make it happen. And the Biden administration has not suspended that executive order. In fact, I am told that they plan to go forward with implementation. In fact, I'm not just told, but I know they're planning to go forward with implementation, because I've actually been talking to some people in the new administration about what to do in terms of going forward with it. That doesn't happen if there's no public support.
That's good.
I think there is public support for it. I think there's actually quite tremendous support. And people do get upset. People are experiencing, as I said, 100 people died in Texas, hundreds died in California. The people and their friends and neighbors probably never heard about EMP, but they know there's something wrong with the electric grid. They know that the public safety is being neglected. And anyone with common sense could look at that and say, well, you know, if it's California, the utilities aren't even doing what's necessary to protect electric grid towers from being blown down by high winds, and they're not even taking out old trees that can fall on power line towers mm-hmm. and start forest fires. In 2019, there were forest fires all over California caused by an unsafe power grid, okay, and that killed hundreds of people, probably thousands. You know, the whole town of Paradise in California was wiped out. You probably know more about that than I do, being in California yourself.
Yeah, and the power companies are all being sued for it. You'd think just...
That's right. And their solution, the power company solution, they had obviously thought this through and said, do we spend money on protecting the grid from high winds and vegetation? Or do we let the worst happen and then have a strategy of declaring bankruptcy so that we can't be sued? They obviously tried the strategy of declaring bankruptcy, and the utilities are trying to do the same thing in Texas to escape responsibility for their neglect. The bottom line here is that, you know, I think people do know that the grid is not being managed safely, and that if the electric utilities cannot be trusted to do the simple things to protect against ice storms in Texas, to protect against wildfires in California. I mean, what an irony. You know, you've got the spectrum of bad things happening, almost like out of the apocalypse. People being burned to death in California, people being freezing to death in Texas, all because utilities wouldn't take simple precautions, you know, not technologically complicated, not even that, not very expensive, to stop these things from happening. Well, if they're not going to do that, how can we trust them to protect against sophisticated threats like an electromagnetic pulse or like cyber warfare? Obviously, they can't be trusted. And that's the problem. You know, despite all the bills and despite all the executive orders and despite all the initiatives at the state level, what all these things have in common is they haven't changed the fundamental institutional relationship, this boring thing that I'm about to bore your audience with, okay? And I probably have bored them in the past, but I'll try to make it brief.
They like it.
Because the bad guys in this scenario are called the United States Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in other words, the U.S. FERC, and the North American Electric Reliability Corporation, the NERC. Now, the FERC is supposed to be the federal body that regulates all the electric utilities in the country to protect the public interest, to provide for public safety, reliability, and national security. That's what they're supposed to do. And the NERC is supposed to be the representative of the 3,000 electric utilities in this country that partners with FERC to make it happen. But the reality is what political scientists call regulatory capture. You know, this issue about the electric grid being foundational to our national security is new, and people haven't paid attention to it. It's only when the EMP Commission delivered its reports, you know, a decade ago, that this idea of the electric grid being foundational to national security came onto the radar screen. And for years and years, the FERC-NERC relationship has gone on basically in the dark without much attention being paid to it by the media or by anybody else. You know, and what has happened is the NERC has managed to make all the FERC commissioners former employees of the electric power industry, so that the commissioners are all former lawyers and lobbyists for the electric power industry.
Oh.
And then they serve on, you know, they serve there temporarily, and then they golden parachute back into the industry, you know, the rotating door. And so it's very hard to get FERC to do anything that NERC doesn't want. NERC, in effect, regulates itself. It's managed to establish what a 19th century type so-called regulatory relationship between itself and the U.S. government. You know, so in other words, it isn't regulated. It regulates itself, and consequently, it literally gets away with murder and is getting away with murder. And if this situation isn't changed, they'll get away with genocide. Because if we're talking about an EMP and a cyber attack or a cyber attack that shuts down the national grid for a year, you know, we're not talking about hundreds of deaths. We're talking about killing off perhaps 90% of the population through starvation, disease, societal collapse, and losing World War III, which is the likely context in which that's going to happen. So that's what's got to happen. You know, Washington has got to wake up to the fact that, you know, that it isn't enough to... The other thing I think that's happened is civilizational decline in a way. Yeah, I've talked about this before in the show. We're like the late Roman Empire, you know. There was a time in the America I grew up in, you know, in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, if the President of the United States passed an executive order, that executive order would be implemented. He's the commander-in-chief.
Sure.
If the Congress of the United States passed a law, the law would be obeyed by the U.S. government. The Congress is the law-writing part in the Constitution. You know, they write the laws, and the government has to obey the law. And that used to work, you know? And if the president and the Congress, you know, if the president writes an executive order and then it's codified to law, and it's a law by the Congress, which I think is the only time it's happened, you know, for EMP, then you've got a double whammy. You know, where the executive branch and the judicial branch have joined forces and ordered the U.S. government to do it. But it isn't happening in the late Roman Empire, in our equivalent of the late Roman Empire, because there's this thing that's grown up called the administrative state.
Yep.
That is it thinks of itself as a government unto itself, and the executive branch and the legislative branch are mere inconveniences. You know, it doesn't respect the Constitution. It thinks it knows better than anybody, and it's going to do what it wants to do. And and all it has to do is play a waiting game with Congresses and presidents and wait till they go away.
Sure, because they keep switching seats and, just wait them out. They say that. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure you know that, but it's interesting because the bureaucracy will say that. There was a VA issue like eight years ago, I guess, and the director of the big building where they do VA disability claims down in Oakland, he told his staff, he had a staff meeting, and he told them, don't worry about that congressman up north. He's a first termer. You know, we'll be done with him in a couple of years. Just keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
No concern.
He'll be gone. A president will be gone in four or eight years.
It was kind of great, though, when he got reelected, the guy retired. So that was...
His days were numbered.
He actually knew that his time was up. We've got to take a really quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Bry. We are talking about his article, actually. We'll talk about that more, but the title was so much fun, I couldn't resist. It is Bitcoin's Tulip Mania and Electric Grid Insecurity. I don't know if he wrote the title or the publication did. We'll give him all the credit because it's a fun title.
There you go.
Be right back. You're listening to We the People.
U.S. Oh, sorry. Jumped the gun there.
You can join us at wethepeopleradio.us.
it's time.
I love that song. Makes me laugh every
time.
I love
that song, too.
Something funny about it.
Right. Well, it mocks my profession, but that's all right.
That's what makes it funny.
Yes, right. Well, on the title of my article, my original title, I think, was slightly better.
Oh.
My original title was Of Bitcoins, Tulips, and Electric Grid Insecurity. And he'll change that to just Bitcoins, Tulip Mania, and Electric Grid Insecurity. I prefer my original title slightly more. But
well,
maybe
the fact
I
that it had tulips in there was like, huh? I mean, you know.
Well, exactly. That's why I thought it was a better title. Because if you want to know what those things all have in common, you have to read the article.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you have to wonder what Tulip Mania is, too. And I don't think the editor knew what it was until she read the article. But that's all right. I mean, it didn't. It's close enough to my original title that I wasn't too miffed about it. Sometimes they change the article title so dramatically that it really diminishes, I think. You know, because I do try to put some thought into what I title my articles. But anyway, I wrote that article before the Texas ice storm.
Oh.
And before, you know, it was in a period where I thought, you know, there wasn't going to be much attention to electric grid security because there wasn't that much happening at the time. And so I thought, well, the Bitcoin thing is a good hook. And I wrote that article then before the Texas ice storm happened and then modified it to incorporate the ongoing events in Texas later. But basically what that's about is, you know, and I was also trying to incorporate the super rich in support of our cause, because bitcoins, as your audience may know if they follow these things, are a form of cryptocurrency that there's a run on them now, and bitcoins have they don't exist physically. You can't hold a bitcoin in your hand. You know, they just exist as bits and bytes in cyberspace. And they're what's called a cryptocurrency, and they're now worth a single Bitcoin now is worth $50,000 for a single Bitcoin.
Wow!
Because the super rich have been buying them up like mad. And the Bitcoin was invented in 2009 by a person who's We actually don't know what his real name is. There is a name. It's in the article. But the name isn't actually a real name. It's a made-up name to disguise who the inventor was. And the because even the inventor wants to be cryptic and unknown. And the thing about a Bitcoin is that there's only 21 million of them in circulation. And Bitcoin is so designed so that there can't ever be more than 21 million bitcoins. Allegedly, there can never be more than that.
Hmm.
And the inventor made them that way deliberately to try to make them artificially scarce. And they weren't a big deal, you know, and in fact, when they were first invented, you know, they were criticized by some economists. Particularly, there was a Dutch economist, the head of the Dutch banking system, who compared the bitcoins to the tulip mania of 400 years ago, and you know, and basically said that during the tulip mania, you know, that actually a bitcoin potentially is even worse than the tulip mania, because when the tulip mania bubble burst, you'd at least end up with a tulip bulb, whereas if the bitcoin bubble bursts, you won't have anything in your hand. And for those who don't know it, you know, 400 years ago there was this. Historians argue over whether it was the first economic bubble, but tulips, the flower, were new to Europe, new to Western Europe, that had just been imported from the Ottoman Empire. This is in the early 1600s. And there was just a craze for them all across Europe. People loved tulip flowers. They were so new, so beautiful and everything. And Holland at the time, most people don't know this, but it was actually a superpower, a great power at the time. They had one of the biggest navies in the world. They had a world empire. Their state per capita income was higher than any other country in the world. And they had the most advanced economic system, including a stock market, an early form of the stock market. And tulip bulbs were so popular, they were even popular with the stockbrokers in Holland, who started trading tulip bulbs the way you would trade and invest in gold. And on paper, in just a few years, you know, because of the popularity of the tulip, the worth of tulip bulbs went up to 50,000 golden guilders for a single tulip bulb.
Wow.
Yeah, that's more than a skilled craftsman could make in 10 years, to give an idea.
For one bulb.
For one tulip bulb. Now this was all on paper, mind you, the way it works in our own stock market. That was the paper value. Because people just assumed that, you know, that the tulip bulbs were really going to be worth that, and that, you know, and that by buying the paper, the stock on tulip bulbs, you know, that you were basically getting the equivalent of whatever gold was. But then one day, I think it was in 1637, there was an auction where the paper stocks on tulip bulbs were to be traded. You were to trade real gold guilders for real tulip bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wanted to make that trade. And overnight, the bottom fell out of the tulip bulb market. And the tulip bulb lost its 99.9999% of its value. It lost that much of its value. It became basically worthless.
A weed.
Right.
Just another flower.
And that's the famous tulip mania. There was a famous 19th century book called The Madness of Crowds, and the tulip mania in Holland is one of his examples of how people acting as herds and not as intelligent thinking individuals, you know, how herd type behavior among human beings can lead a society off the cliff, you know, and that's basically what happened with the tulip mania is one example of that. Now, it may be, though, that the Bitcoin is not going to go the way the tulip bulb, because unlike tulip bulbs, Bitcoins do have some inherent value, but the inherent value they have is a real bad sign for the future of our civilization. You know, the reason the super rich are buying up cryptocurrencies, buying up Bitcoins, is because they the intrinsic value of Bitcoins is that governments have a very hard time figuring out how much wealth you have when your wealth is invested in Bitcoins. It's a cryptocurrency. And the usual methods of checking bank accounts and things like that that the IRS does to snoop around doesn't work. The other thing is that the Bitcoins, theoretically anyway, will protect you from hyperinflation, because the super rich are really concerned that governments all over the world are printing money like mad. The United States, you know, everybody, the pound, the yen, the dollar, they're all being printed out like mad to finance, you know, all the various COVID-19 and climate change and government spending that's just sort of gone berserk. And that someday, you know, reality will catch up with this government spending in terms of the actual value of traditional money, and there'll be hyperinflation. They're afraid of hyperinflation that will make the dollars as worthless as tulip bulbs. And so they see the Bitcoins as a security against that eventuality. So in effect, the value, escalating value of Bitcoins is a vote of no confidence by the super rich in the future of our civilization. Which is really ironic, since the super rich have had a major role to play in making our civilization what it is. You know, they tend to support the big spending governments that believe in climate change and spending trillions on COVID and all the rest. But when it comes to where do they put their dollars, they're putting them into Bitcoins, not into U.S. federal treasury bonds. You know, so the point of bottom line of my article was that, well, you guys, you super rich who believe in the Bitcoin and are investing in the Bitcoin, you'd better pay attention to what happened in Texas. You know, because you're also betting on the idea that electronic civilization is going to continue.
That's true, too.
And if electronic civilization doesn't continue, and we don't get a secure grid that can fail catastrophically like this, your bitcoins will become as worthless as tulip bulbs, too. Because cryptocurrencies all depend on the electric grid and on the technologies of electronic civilization continuing to work. So that was the theme of that article.
Sure, because if that goes down, you have no access to your Bitcoin.
Well, the other,
that's right.
The other thing, too, you know, people, you know, we look at the events of today through the lens of today, not always through the lens of history. And so I always think that's your... you know, that's your superpower. You bring in these historical things that if we heard about them, we forgot about them and didn't apply them to today. And it's like, you know what? That's sobering. That even back then, I mean, the idea today that you would put, you know, 10 years of wages against a tulip bulb, you think, well, that's ridiculous. But then you think about Bitcoin and, well, there's nothing there at all. You don't even have the tulip bulb. So that kind of makes you wonder about that.
You get nothing in your hand.
Got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can find all this information and forward the show to your friends at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You have to learn to pace yourself. Pressure. You're just like everybody else. You've only had to run so far, so good. But you will come to a place where the only thing you feel are loaded guns in your face, and you'll have to deal with
You know, it's kind of funny. We think that, you know, just here in modern times that we're stupid and that we would bank on things like Bitcoin. You know, we just thought of all that stuff. But
this, well, no, they've traded in
the 1600s.
Strange things in the past.
Tulip mania. We ought to do some kind of a contest for anybody whoever even remembers that or knew that. Thanks. You made us think about something new. I like that. So now that we've done that, what's your thought on where the Bitcoin thing is headed? Tulip Town, or?
Well, my thought is my mouth is watering for some Mount Shasta spring water to have with my whiskey on St. Patrick's Day as a chaser.
It'd be an excellent combination, by the way.
Absolutely. Well, in terms of Bitcoin, I don't know. The article was a call for the super rich to use their influence on the government to advance electric grid security, because it's in their interest to do it, even if they don't care about the survival of 330 million Americans, which they probably don't.
Now they're busy funding depopulation efforts, so come.
Presumably they care about their own wealth. And if they did, you know, if they want to keep their bitcoins more as from losing their value and becoming worthless as tulip bulbs, you know, then they should pressure the Congress and the government to do what's necessary to correct the institutional problems. And in the aftermath of writing that article, there were a couple of things that happened to give me some hope. You know, we now have a cybersecurity czar in the White House, you know, which is a first-time thing, and this has been authorized by Congress. So there is a person in charge of cybersecurity protections of everything, which would include the electric grid, to oversee these matters. And that's what I had recommended in my book, EMP Manhattan Project, and it's one of the things the EMP Commission recommended, you know, that they actually have a And unfortunately, the Trump administration, well, it's not entirely true that Trump didn't have an EMP czar. Under the president's EMP executive order, Trump was the EMP, was basically the EMP slash cyber czar. But, you know, a president has too many distractions, too many things going on, you know, to be able to focus and include, and his, as does his national security advisor. But so now at least there's one person in the White House who has the responsibility for overseeing all of this. And with the powers of the White House and the Congress being behind you, maybe something will happen. And the other thing that gives me hope is that there have been a series of things that have happened in very short order. I mean, one of the big disadvantages we always seem to have is that these things happen a year apart, 2 years apart, you know, and Washington doesn't have a long memory. So these things get forgotten. People get all excited about them when they happen. And there's all kinds of talk about fixing the problem. And then some other problem comes up, and they get distracted, and everybody forgets about it. It goes away. But we've had three developments, you know, that in a row over a relatively short period of time. You know, last year, in December, the revelation about the big solar winds cyber attack by Russia, you know, that penetrated so deeply into the U.S. government, basically the most, potentially the most damaging cyber attack that ever hit us. And it was done in close coordination with a strategic forces nuclear exercise, personally led by Vladimir Putin, where he actually executed live ICBM and sublaunched ballistic missile launches and cruise missile launches and a real, you know, real missiles being really launched, you know, and an anti-satellite, actual live anti-satellite exercise, putting up a new anti-satellite weapon. All of this stuff happening around the solar winds hack, so it's really kind of hard to ignore that or forget about it, which is why we've got a cybersecurity czar in the White House. And then just when after the elections and the aftermath of the elections is about when we would start as a government forgetting about these things. But then the ice storm happened in Texas, and we've got 100 dead people, unfortunately. But maybe all this tragedy and loss of life, property damage, you know, will be redeemed if it means the country will get protected. And I was pleased to see that in Texas, the bad guys, there's this organization called ERCOT. You know, they're basically the NERC for Texas. You know, they're the representative for the Texas Electric Utilities. They're the ones who have been blocking Senator Bob Hall's bills, or watering his bills down so that they don't accomplish anything by doing endless studies. And I was pleased to see that half the board of ERCOT has been forced to resign. So that's so the government of Texas doesn't trust them anymore. That's a big, good development.
Yeah.
So you've got those two things, the solar winds, cyber attack, unprecedented cyber attack on our society and our critical infrastructures. Then, you know, the example right in front of our eyes of what's happening in Texas, you know, just happening now. And now last week, after I published the article, I've got a new article coming out about this one. Last week, China threatened to black out India. And, you know, what's going on is India and China have been fighting a low-intensity war in the high Himalayas over the border. Ever since China illegally annexed Tibet in 1951, China has periodically tried to expand at India's expense, you know, pushing out along the Himalayas. And India, of course, has resisted that. But today, both India and China are nuclear superpowers and can turn each other's cities into mushroom clouds if either side goes too far. So the war in the high Himalayas, you've got two nuclear powers fighting a Stone Age war in the Himalayas because both sides are refraining from using modern weapons to fight it. And it's being fought with shovels and clubs and fists, you know, up close and personal, just like Stone Age combat. And so what happened last week, China tried to break the stalemate and get India to back off, apparently by blacking out the city of Mumbai, which is a huge city. Millions of people live in Mumbai and in that region. And, in effect, threatening to black out the whole Indian national electric grid, you know, which they demonstrated they could do by blacking out Mumbai. And this is just another sterling example. I mean, I'm hoping that this will be one of those Monitor versus Merrimack moments in military history. You know, like during the Civil War, the two ironclads, the Union ironclad Monitor, fought the Confederate ironclad. Its actual name was the Virginia, not Merrimack. But histories written by the North tend to describe it as Monitor versus Merrimack. Merrimack was the original name of the ship before the Confederacy turned it into the Virginia. And this basically ended the age of sail and of wooden ships and was just a transitional moment that changed everything in naval warfare. And I think the implications here are even bigger, where you've got, I mean, the not only has China demonstrated the capability to black out another nation and has demonstrated the political will to do that, but maybe the most important lesson from this is China considers it less escalatory, less dangerous for it to threaten to black out India's electric grid than to actually conduct, you know, normal combat in the high Himalayas, you know, rather than resorting to gunfire and pistols. That's too escalatory. Oh, but it's not so escalatory to black out the Indian electric grid. Here's an option short of classical warfare. They consider it a gray zone kind of aggression. Very dangerous idea, because in effect, blacking out the electric grid would be catastrophic for India. You know, it would be as bad as a nuclear war. If it's a protracted blackout, you end up killing millions of people and destroying the society. India's an electronic civilization. And this has to be remembered or understood in the context of President Biden's recent decision to suspend President Trump's executive order that was designed to end U.S. supply chain dependency on electric grid equipment from China. You know, we've got 300 big transformers in our, among our 2,000 transformers.
Hold that thought, because we're going to get into this last minute and get cut off at the pass here by the news. But I think that's, you know, this big, let's write a whole bunch of executive orders, and by the way, let's erase all the other ones. Never really a great plan.
We'll be right back with our
guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. We have him hostage for another hour. See, that's when it's good to do a show on Sunday afternoons. So you can find everything about the program at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Good afternoon, and welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
But leave me no opening to say anything?
No. I'm just going to move on right on through that part. It's insignificant. Pape Machinery is our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. And you can visit them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They've got everything John Deere, Honda, steel. They've got it in stock. Go up and see them. Their phone number is 226-9226, or you can get them on the web at papemachinery.com. Big website, too. You can find everything you want. You can even price your own stuff out on that website.
Hmm.
Yeah. Buy online.
P-A-P-E Machinery?
P-A-P-E.
Nice.
Yep.
There you have it.
Yeah.
All right, so I don't want to jam up a bunch of time, because we were having a fun conversation with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. And I hope that you will go back and listen to his previous shows. He's always got tons of good information, just, I don't know, stuff either you didn't know or hadn't thought of in a while. And we're lucky. He has time on Sunday afternoons, it seems. He likes to hang out with us. So we're kind of living,
I'm glad living large. Yeah.
It's a heck of a lot more fun than I don't know. know. Sometimes it's fun to read it, but then I don't know. I think we all like being told, you know, tell me a story.
Yeah.
So it's easy to remember when you explain it like you do, Dr. Pry. So where do you want to go next?
Well, before we move on to more national security stuff,
yeah.
I couldn't help noting that in the introduction you mentioned that you're married to a Welshman.
An old Cundiff over
Irish.
Here.
Yeah, you're Irish. And, oh, I didn't know he was your husband.
Yeah.
You're Irish and you're married to a Welshman.
Yeah, go figure that out. Huh?
Maybe, maybe that's why you constantly have me on your show as a guest, because you may not know it, but the Irish and the Welsh are supposed to have saved Western civilization.
I know. Isn't that great?
Yeah, one of my favorite professors in graduate school, this guy, a Welshman named Lawrence Evans, Professor Lawrence Evans, probably passed away now. I haven't seen him in decades, but he was a Welshman. Excellent. One of the most brilliant scholars on foreign affairs and international security I ever had the privilege to meet. And he was quite serious that he had this theory that the Welsh and the Irish saved Western civilization. And I think he's right when you think of the history of it, because they were the only areas, Wales and Ireland, you know, the monasteries that were there, mm-hmm. were bastions of learning, high bastions of learning, and they had preserved the Roman manuscripts from the Roman Empire. And they're the only part, they weren't overrun by the Anglo-Saxon barbarians, you know, during the Dark Ages. And so a lot of what we know about classical history, the history of Rome, the roots of our Western civilization, the political ideas that became the foundation of America and of our present, were saved for us by the Irish and the Welsh. Just another little historical footnote for your readers' interest that they won't be reading in one of my articles. At least not, I haven't written about it yet.
Well, I think there's a book out, and I believe it's called How the Irish Saved...
Christianity.
Yeah. They were the ones that saved all the manuscripts and when they were burning everything.
Yeah, they were too fierce to be... they were like, oh, those guys are all nuts. Leave them alone up there. You'll just die if you go up there. Just skip them. And they kept all of that. But just a spoiler alert for you, in case you're an audiobook person... I got that book on a cassette tape years ago. Guy was a great writer, but wowza, not a good book reader. He was. I never could listen to more than 10 minutes. I kept falling asleep. It was terrible.
Oh yeah, that's a bad trait when you're narrating a book.
If you have insomnia, the Irish, How the Irish Saved Christianity, get the audiobook.
You'll blow through it.
you get your sleep pattern back in order. But no, it was a great book. That's why I thought it'd be fun to listen to while I was driving. I thought I'd listen to it again. But yeah, I was going to crash the car, so that was not good.
Well, the Irish are still trying to save Christianity, it seems. But back to India and the blackout war between China, India, and India, the one-way blackout war, where China blacked out Mumbai, threatened to black out the whole of the Indian national grid, and India's national experts and defense ministry officials have been calling for ripping out all of the equipment they purchased from China, because one of the big mistakes they made that made them vulnerable, apparently, is that they've got a lot of transformers in their electric grid from China, a lot of SCADAs, that is, control systems, not just in the electric grid, but these SCADAs are also in their railway system, all kinds of critical infrastructures. And, you know, they're concerned that these things are almost certainly designed by China to be vulnerable to cyber attacks, probably to EMP attacks. And so going forward, you know, they've got to get transformers and SCADA systems from somewhere else, from some actor that isn't going to use them as a weapon against them, as has just happened last week. And I'm hoping that the Biden administration will pay attention to that, you know, and reverse the decision to suspend President Trump's executive order. It's called Securing the Bulk Power System, you know, which was designed, that executive order was designed to to end U.S. dependency on foreign imports for critical electric grid equipment like transformers and SCADAs so that they would be made in America. And that's just common sense. I mean, I don't think, and especially we shouldn't be buying from an overt enemy like China.
No kidding.
But I wouldn't even support, and I don't, and I think President Trump, when he signed the executive order, you know, also had in mind that we would start ending our dependency on places like South Korea and Germany for this equipment. You know, even with an allied country, a friendly country, you know, the chain of custody, that equipment has to be manufactured overseas. It has to be shipped to us. You know, a country like China or Russia or North Korea or Iran, you know, they've got the intelligence forces that could intercept that equipment and put vulnerabilities into it. You know, it would be hard, you know, to add a chip or something to it, you know, while it's being sent overseas, sent to us, you know, so that without our knowledge, and since it goes, it doesn't pass through any part of the U.S. government. It goes right into the hands of the private sector. Our private sector utilities, you know, they're not focused on national security. They don't even have anybody working there that's really a cyber expert or an expert on EMP who would know that, hey, you know, this system, there's something been added to this system that shouldn't be there, you know, that could potentially make it vulnerable. Now, obviously, it's worse when you have the China actually making the thing because they can design the vulnerability right into it.
Sure.
But the bottom line is that I wouldn't trust any equipment coming from overseas, you know. Even stuff made in America could potentially be sabotaged, but if the chain of custody is in our own hands, we've got a much, much better opportunity to make sure that the stuff is secure. You know, just the way we do when we make fighter aircraft or aircraft carriers. You know, we don't want to trust foreign countries to be making that stuff for us. We need to make it ourselves.
Sure.
And so equipment upon which the lives of 330 million Americans depend and that our electronic civilization depends upon should be made in America. You know, we used to make it all in America. We invented the electric grid and exported the technology all over the world. And, you know, it's really ironic that it's gotten to a situation where this technology, which is foundational to our modern electronic civilization, isn't made by us anymore. And that's got to change if we expect not to become victims in the future.
Yeah, and we got to take a break. But when we come back, maybe you could talk a little bit about why an American firm, you know, like Tesla or somebody, couldn't start making these transformers. Why aren't they pursuing that? Obviously, with all the security risks that are out there in the current equipment, there's obviously a market for it. But let's talk about that when we come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
We can do that, Bill.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
.us.
The dream is still alive. Someday it will come true. And this country, it belongs to folks like me and you. So let the voice of freedom sing out through this land. This is our.
There you go. Yeah, so why don't we make our own transformers here and we sell them to the rest of the world? I mean, that seems like it'd be a money-making venture.
It was a money-making venture for many decades, and that's what we did. And we do make a lot of our own transformers, most of them. There are the most important transformers, though. They're called extra high voltage transformers, EHV transformers. And beneath this, there's all kinds of lower transformers. You know, there's high transformer voltage transformers and medium voltage and low voltage, et cetera, et cetera. And we make those in this country, most of them. But we don't make the extra high voltage transformers anymore, the EHV transformers. And they're the most important one. They're the foundation of our electronic civilization. They enable you to take electricity from, let's say, the Hoover Dam and drive it to Southern California or Colorado somewhere, hundreds of kilometers away. Then there's another big transformer, EHV transformer, at the end of the line that steps it down. And then it feeds it into these lower transformers and into the so it can be distributed. So, you know, a 500,000 volts gets stepped down to 120 volts that you use in your home. And the big transformers, we started getting out of the habit of making them so that we don't make any anymore because slave labor is less expensive. And, you know, and the labor in South Korea is less expensive. And even though, and once you stopped manufacturing them, you know, there's craftsmanship that goes into these transformers. They're still basically, they were invented by Nikola Tesla, you know, back at the turn of the last century, around 1900, you know, and the first electric grid, big national electric grid that used big transformers, EHV transformers, was at Niagara Falls, New York. And the transformers we have today are very similar. I mean, they're very similar, but there's artwork and craftsmanship that goes into them. They can't be mass-produced. Every big transformer has a unique role to play in the grid, but the windings inside the heart of the transformer have to be done by hand and done in a special way, and there have to be just so many windings made of so much material and insulated by hand in a certain way in order for it to work. And we basically lost, when we stopped manufacturing them and became dependent upon other countries, we lost that craftsmanship, and we have to get it back. Now, this vulnerability, fortunately, you know, because of the preaching of the EMP Commission and others, you know, Washington has been aware of that vulnerability for a while, and we have made some effort to start manufacturing big transformers in our country again. I think there are three firms that have stepped up that are going to try to start making big extra high voltage transformers in the country again. I don't think we've actually manufactured one yet, but they're moving in that direction. And we won't know for years until they've succeeded. You know, a transformer like that is supposed to have a lifespan of 30 or 40 years. Brazil tried to end its dependency on foreign suppliers and become an exporter, and it started manufacturing its own extra high voltage transformers, but it found out that they burned out in 5 years. So, you know, we won't know for a while, not until we actually start putting transformers into the system and to see how long they last, that we've gotten back the lost art of making these big transformers. So that's part of the problem. It's just, you know, very difficult to do. And in fact, the worldwide production of extra high voltage transformers, all the countries in the world only make 180 of them every year. You know, there's 2,000 transformers like that in our country. So that's an idea of how difficult it is to make one of these things.
Sure.
They, you know, they're bigger than a house. They weigh hundreds of tons. Just moving them around is a project. We've only got 3 railroad cars in the whole country that can carry an extra high voltage transformer. And when you try to move it into place in the grid, you know, the highways have to be widened, bridges have to be reinforced, you know, so it's a big, big deal, just moving them around. But all the more reason to make them here instead of trying to have
sure.
to
yeah, no kidding.
Bring them in from overseas. That's so one reason. The main reason, though, is just greed and laziness. You know, it's if they can save a few pennies, you know, and get it from overseas, the utilities will always do that because the profit margin is always top, is always their highest priority. And so those have been the reasons for America, you know, basically losing that technological edge when it came to our own electric grid. But now that it's understood that the electric grid, electric power is foundational to our national security, we're starting to see things in a different light, and hopefully intervention by cybersecurity guards, czars, and presidents and Congress will hopefully start changing this.
Have any of those high voltage transformers failed and shut down parts of the grid?
Oh yes, yes. During Hurricane Andrew in Florida, there was an extra high voltage transformer that failed and caused a protracted blackout. They had a heck of a time replacing it and finding workarounds. If we were to lose large numbers of them, and I'm not talking about most of them. In fact, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission did I'll call it a sensitive study, but I'm going to call it a study that was reported in the Wall Street Journal. Okay, there was a reported study by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that was in a series of pretty famous articles by in the Wall Street Journal. And according to the study, if nine of these big transformers out of the 2,000 in the country were knocked out by terrorists, you know, it would cause a national blackout lasting 18 months. So we have had transformer failures, and they have, you know, they have caused protracted problems. But fortunately, we haven't had simultaneous failure of even small numbers. You know, fortunately, they failed like one at a time, so we've managed to handle it.
Well, I think that you guys have been talking about this for how many years? When did the EMP Commission first start?
2001. So we've been talking about this for 20 years, 21 years now.
Wow. You would think that the first time you talked about it, everybody would go, oh, good idea. We better take care of all this stuff.
I have to add a footnote to that, okay?
Okay.
That's when the EMP Commission was talking about it. When I moved from the CIA over to working on the House Armed Services Committee in 1995, you know, the first thing I did was, because I was the CIA's nuclear weapons and EMP guy, especially on EMP. I was their senior expert on that. And almost nobody in Congress had even heard of EMP. But I brought it to their attention. And, you know, they were very concerned about it. And I thought back in 1995, wow, this is going to be great. You know, Congress will pass a bill and we will solve this problem. You know, the country will be protected. Then I can go on and do something else. You know, that was 1995. And, man, I had no idea when I left CIA and went to work for the policy world, you know, left the intelligence world. Well, I've always had a foot in the intelligence world, but mainly I've been trying to move things forward in the policy world, working through Congress, congressional commissions, and the Department of Defense and Homeland Security. I had no idea how hard it is to get that elephant to move. You know, here I am, an old man. I was a young man when I broached this, and I thought, oh, this is going to be a great thing on my resume. We'll get this problem solved in 1 year, and I'll save hundreds of millions of lives. And even if I don't get
it'll be totally easy because they'll completely get it. It's not even complicated.
Yes, exactly. You know, and everybody did seem to get it. You know, but the institutional problems. You know, with FERC and NERC and the corruption of congressional energy committees, you know, You know, you have a majority of Congress wanting to do something, but it only takes one chairman. You know, the Energy Committees control what happens in to NERC and FERC and to the utilities, and these guys have been in the pocket of the utilities forever too. You know, when you look at who makes campaign contributions to the Democrat and Republican who chair these energy committees, you know, they have very cozy, two cozy relationships. It's really amazing that it's not illegal for the chairman of an energy committee to be getting money from the electric utilities, you know? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it seems a little inbred there.
Yeah, exactly. That seems a little corrupt.
The other thing, too, I guess, we've never really asked you this, but maybe after this break, could you sort of explain, I would think, if you, but, you know, here I'm thinking like,
yes,
I'm using...
You're not going to go all logic, are you?
I've gone into the labyrinth of logic where there's nothing but, you know, sadness and despair. But I'm thinking if you're a power company, wouldn't you want to have... Like some, wouldn't you want to have a good grid so that it doesn't blow up in your face and you don't have to pay people because they died or you burned down their house or it just didn't work? You would think that they would be have some investment in their future or their longevity. How about that? Maybe that's a better word. When we come back, maybe we can...
I would love to answer that question.
Yes, because you know what?
I would love to.
All right, good. We're going to come right back. Our guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can find us at We the People Radio.
.us.
Is that the answer?
That's the answer.
It's the answer to the question. So seriously, though, any other business, you would want to take care of it?
Well, make sure your product is always available so that people could buy it.
And you wouldn't want to have to pay big fines and fees and stuff for screwing up. And so why is it that they're willing to do that?
Well, Aaron, as a student of Christianity, you should know that when the choice is before you to yield to the immediate temptation of putting an extra dollar in your pocket...
The devil made him do it.
...versus sacrificing that profit for the sake of public safety and doing the right thing, you know, ever since the fall from paradise, we will tend to do the wrong thing. And the evidence is before you in California and Texas. You know, why is it that the California electric utilities, you know, would do such stupid things like not replace high power towers supporting high voltage power lines, okay, that are 100 years old and that will clearly be blown down, you know, in high winds or provide proper vegetation management so that a dead tree won't fall on the power lines and start wildfires. Why would you do that, you know? Why would you, in Texas, not provide the insulation and the heating elements? Call a northern state and say, hey, I know that ice storms are rare in Texas, but sometimes they happen. You know, what should I do? And then do it.
Yeah.
Not a hard thing to do, not an expensive thing to do. But we know from recent experience that they have done the wrong thing. And, you know, and I guess it's because they put profit, and we know historically this is also true, libertarians have a real hard time understanding that. Here I'll probably turn off all your audience, okay? Because there is such a faith in the free market, and I have faith in the free market. I'm a free market true believer as well. But the founders were the ultimate libertarians, I think, the ultimate practical libertarians. And they knew that you couldn't go dispense with government altogether and just let society go on without government doing the job of national security and public safety. That's why we have government, you know, because we know that the market, its highest priority is profit, not public safety, not national security. Its highest priority is profit. And in fact, it can be destructive to the public interest, and will be if it operates in the dark, unsupervised, unregulated, uncriticized for long enough. There was a time when Coca-Cola was cocaine cola, and they actually put cocaine in the soda, you know, in the 19th century to addict their customers before we had a Food and Drug Administration to make sure that didn't happen. You know, there was a time when you could open up a can of peaches and there'd be a human thumb inside, you know, before we had a Food and Drug Administration.
Yeah, there was a time when you didn't get a vaccine that actually went through the whole process before the
Before they gave it to you and you run the risk you'll glow in the dark in here.
Yeah.
There was a time when automobiles didn't have safety glass or seatbelts or bumpers that would work, you know, at speeds higher than 5 miles per hour. You know, airline safety was not what it was until we had a Federal Aviation Administration. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to just take the word of the airlines for it. And that's why, because the electric utilities, there isn't really any state-level or federal-level government agency to oversee these guys and make sure they're doing the right things to provide for public safety and national security. Their reasoning seems to be that, well, I'd rather have that dollar in my pocket, you know. Ice storms are rare enough so that hopefully it won't happen on my watch. And I'd rather be able to give a good report to my shareholders that I've increased our profits so I can afford to buy that new log cabin on Mount Shasta than invest the money in something that isn't going to happen for 25 or 50 years. And when it comes to cyber warfare or EMP attacks, oh, that's never going to happen. You know, why should I spend money on that? I'd rather have a more impressive bottom line for my shareholders so that I can get an increase in my salary. And so that's why, you know, because we're fallen from paradise, and when people are not having to pay any penalty for their wrongdoing, they'll continue to do wrongdoing. It's really interesting to me. I mean, as an observation, I don't want to get your radio station burned down, but...
It's supposed to rain today anyway. We'll be okay.
Not like we haven't tried before.
You know, last summer we had cities burning across America because of the injustice done to George Floyd, a man who was, many people believe, you know, murdered by the police, right? And then great injustice was done to him. And here we have 100 people dead in Texas, froze to death in Texas, in effect murdered by the electric power industry. I don't even know the names of any of the victims. I haven't seen them published in the newspapers. You know,
they stopped talking about it pretty quick.
As much outrage. Yeah. They deserve at least as much outrage. And people need to get mad and stop this from happening. There are even more people dead in California. And, you know, the utilities are literally getting away with murder. But I hope that answers your question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just...
And not to beat a dead horse, but... George Floyd's family is $26 million richer right now because the city of Minneapolis just rolled over on a judgment for him. So, I mean, it's a shame the guy died, but yeah, that's a pretty good payout.
Wow.
Considering you have all these people in Texas that died. And
all they were doing was sitting at home trying to stay warm.
I would like to see their families. That would actually help solve the problem, you know. If the utilities started having to pay the property damage,
sure.
The debts,
mm-hmm.
You know, they should have to pay. At least, if not actually be put on trial and go to jail, you know, for murder or manslaughter, you know. There's really no excuse for it. You know, it's not like some kind of unforeseen act of God. what has happened with the wildfires, what has happened with the ice storms. This was entirely foreseeable that these things would happen.
Well,
entirely
and,
foreseeable.
And we've done some shows. Jesus Arredondo is a policy expert in California. I'm sure he works elsewhere, but he is in California. And we've got a couple of shows with him in our archives that if people are curious about what the California infrastructure looks like, the thing I cannot forget about the show we did with him, we were talking about the renewable mandate and how ridiculous and fanciful it is. And he said, he asked us, he goes, well, you remember when they came up with 17% renewable, the renewable mandate at 17%? No, but okay. He said, yeah, you know how they came up with that? They decided 15 sounded too low and 20 sounded too high. So they picked 17, but they had zero plan for how to get to that.
And they've since raised that now, I think, to like 30. It had nothing to do
with what they thought they could actually achieve. It was just a number that sounded good. He said, I was sitting in the meeting. I know exactly where that came from. So you have states doing that at the same time. And
well, it puts the whole system. Look at Texas. They went to all this renewable energy that all of a sudden wasn't renewable when they needed it most.
And that's always been the thing.
Yeah, 25% of their power was coming from so-called renewables, which made the grid more vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
You know, because another thing that happens is when part of the system crashes like that, and suddenly you lose 25%. All the rest has to work harder to balance the system. You know, and you end up having energy sloshing around through the grid in such a way that it can end up self-destructing, destroying control systems, destroying transformers. In addition to failing to provide the energy during an example of a so-called climate change, if there was real climate change, you might expect to see something, the weather being altered like that, okay, in a so-called climate change moment. But in addition to not being able to deliver the energy, it actually puts the whole grid at risk. And this also happened in the United Kingdom, I think, in 2019. You know, they've been adding windmills to their system. And there was a failure in the generators, windmill generators, you know, that basically closed the whole grid down for a day. So people all over the United Kingdom, you know, were trapped in trains and, you know, they had blackouts and all the rest. Just a small taste of what can happen, you know. And these things aren't being inflicted on us by a hostile adversary that knows what it's doing.
No, right. You know, they are self-inflicted.
If self-inflicted catastrophes.
And does that so Texas was kind of self-contained, but
yes,
most of the time, wouldn't that kind of roll across the country? Who else is self-contained?
Texas,
anybody?
Texas is on its own grid.
Right.
And Florida is close to it, you know, but even they are tied into the eastern grid. You know, we basically have three grid systems, the eastern grid, the western grid, and the Texas grid. And that's one of the things that made Texas so attractive for legislation to try to protect it from EMP and cyber warfare. And Senator Bob Hall, again, my hat is off to him, you know, because he's trying again, has just introduced new legislation to try to protect the Texas grid. And I hope Governor Abbott listens to him this time.
Yeah, I would think that's not going to be a tough sell this time around.
I hope not.
Well, because if they can do it, then we can look at the rest of it.
Exactly. It'll show the rest of the country how to do it. You know, it'll be the way forward for the rest of the country.
So the whole rest of the country is basically cut up into two grids?
Well, three, if you don't count.
If you take out Texas, I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that should terrify everyone, because if an ice storm there created that much havoc, I mean, if you have half the country that could fall prey to that, and there's no, you know, real escape hatch for that. Gosh, that would give people something to think about.
No.
You have 2 minutes
right
to think about it while we do a little break for free enterprise here. Hopefully the kind that's well regulated and overseen. How about that? I guess we'll have to.
Well, it doesn't have to be well regulated. It just doesn't have to kill people.
Yeah, you know, I guess our...
I'm asking for a minimum amount of regulation.
Let's just not kill everybody.
I don't think that's asking for too much.
No, that's like my mom. You know, can't we just not kill everybody? Yeah, there you go. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Good.
Nice.
Not to put too fine a point on it. Hey, so we were chatting here in the studio during the break, and so the question came up: what kind of power, what flavor of power is your favorite, or what would you recommend? Like, if you got to redo the grid and you know, king for a day, tell everybody what to do.
Well, my highest priority is to get the country protected from EMP and cyber warfare. So I wouldn't replace the whole grid or anything like that.
No.
You know, because that's politically just going to be impossible to do.
But, like, pretend we were starting from scratch. Like, based on what you know now, what...
But if I could be, if I could wave a magic wand, start all over again.
Sure.
Based on what we know now, I like small modular nuclear reactors. I think that's my favorite.
That was Bill's guess.
They don't produce any waste, you know, because the fuel is endlessly reprocessed until it's basically inert, so you don't have the nuclear waste problem that you do with the big nuclear reactors we have now.
Uh-huh.
You can design EMP and cyber hardness right into them. And they would decentralize the grid, so it would eliminate the political problem we have with NERC and FERC and all of the evil doings where they have their tentacles in Congress and in various parts of the Department of Energy all over the U.S. government, obstructing things. It would return power, you know, to cities and communities. They would basically be able to control. I mean, I would want the utility to be privatized because the private sector was best for efficiency, but it would give local control, you know, to individual cities, individual communities. Every military base, I'd like to see every military base. There's over 100 of them in the United States. Every large military base have a small modular nuclear reactor designed with enough electricity so that it could supplement and take over from the local civilian grids, too. That way you'd be guaranteeing that you couldn't shut down our military deterrent, you know, and disarm us militarily, because they'd have their own power source right there. And at the same time, the military could step in. There'd be islands of survivability just in case anything went wrong, you know, with the civilian part of the system. You know, they could there'd be a backup to whatever the local city or community or region is. There are technologies to be even go further down the line. You know, what I really like to see, I mean, this alternative that I've just described to you is an example of something that is doable. It's realizable. Mm-hmm. There are small modular nuclear reactors being designed right now with EMP hardness designed into them. But unfortunately, nuclear power is so politically incorrect.
That's what I wondered.
You know, the prospects of that happening are, especially under this administration, are negligible, you know, are almost non-existent. Although, you know, if they really believed in climate change, that's the direction they would go to, because it's actually the perfect solution. If you believed in climate change, too, it would be the perfect solution for that, because these SMRs have the lowest carbon footprint. Well, except for hydropower, you know, they have the lowest carbon footprint around. There's also there's an inventor I know in California. I'm not going to mention his name, but he's a friend of mine. I don't have permission to mention him, but he's come up with a great invention, you know, a super efficient turbine that can convert lakes and streams that previously had been unharnessed for electricity. And it would also enable you to revitalize all kinds of small dams that have been abandoned as a source of hydropower. That is the greenest form of electrical energy. And it would also be a way of decentralizing the system so that you would have, you know, the energy would be local. Going further down, though, and, you know, there are technologies in the pipeline that are so advanced that if the government were competent enough to listen to certain people and get this done, that you could really transform our system and the way it works. I can't get into details, but if these were to be realized, you could, for example, run a car off a battery, an electric car off a battery, that would have an almost infinite life. Every house could be built with a battery in it. You know, not Tesla batteries, okay? These are a much more advanced concept that would basically last the life of the house, you know, almost never have to replace it. And what I like about that is that it would return us, I mean, in addition to being the ultimately decentralized system, which is also the safest system, you know, because it's like having bulwarks in a ship, you know? The smaller the bulwarks and the smaller the islands of survivability, the harder it is going to be for an adversary to attack all of them. And if you had something that was that decentralized, even the small modular nuclear reactors would decentralize things enough that I don't think it would be practical for an adversary to be thinking about attacking our electric power anymore. You know, it's the big grid that makes us vulnerable. But this would definitely, not only would it provide a national security bulwark, but it would provide, I think, it would be another giant step forward toward the kind of society that the founders had in mind when the Constitution was written. You know, before there was electricity, every house had a fireplace, and the heat and cooking and the energy that you needed was all provided by wood in your fireplace. And people didn't have to answer to anybody else. It made every man a king, in a sense, you know?
Sure, you could just look out at the wood pile and know if you were set
right,
or
exactly.
not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this battery could, something like that, could return that sense of independence and sense of and individuality and rugged individualism to our society. Anything that breaks down the dependency and the collectivist spider web that we've all become trapped in is good to turning us back into eagles instead of sheep. And
except now they're,
that's what I would
their
like
big
to
focus is to get rid of hydropower, which...
Yes, that's right. That's one of the greenies. You know, it's just so it's not. Don't ask them to be logical, you know, because it's totally irrational. They want to reduce carbon footprints, they say. They want green energy, they say. But it can only be certain selected kinds of green energy. It can't be the greenest and the smallest carbon footprints, like nuclear power or hydropower. Those are politically incorrect, you know.
Yeah.
And they feel under no obligation to explain, you know, these contradictions.
Yeah, isn't that
so that's
interesting?
Because it's not rational. That's because their views are not built on logic and rationalism. After all, that's from the Aristotelian classical tradition of linear logical thinking, which is no longer in vogue. You know, you're dealing with basically a new religion that doesn't have to be logical.
Yeah, which should be, you know, when they say stupid should hurt. I think we need to add
it
that.
It will hurt.
We need to
it
add that
hurt.
To the list.
Fact,
it is going to hurt.
Yeah, it's hurting us now, actually, in a big way. People are dying from stupid right now.
Yeah. Well, I really hope that they I really hope that there is some consideration going forward, and maybe it starts looking more attractive for some reason. You know, I guess things change. Maybe.
Well, technology changes, and I think if we don't turn our back on technology, and really take a hard look at it, we don't need to go back to things like power, wind power, and solar, and that.
Well, those things are all intermittent.
Yeah, but as that develops and becomes more reliable, I can see us going that way. But I don't think that's the answer. I don't think that's.
It isn't the answer.
No, mm-hmm.
Wind and solar.
It's temporary.
Even looking technologically forward in terms of their greatest efficiencies,
just isn't
there's
there.
No way you can provide most of the electricity that we need from intermittent and unreliable sources.
No.
Do you know that windmills don't even last long enough to pay for themselves?
Solar panels, for the most part, don't either.
They have, and they actually are not green, precisely because of that, because they have to be disposed of, you know?
Jesus Arredondo lined out how much solar there is or how much wind availability in California. I hope people do go back and listen to that because it was interesting.
Yeah, there's only a few
Dr.
places.
Dr. Pry, we have hit the end of the road here. We're going to have to play Beer for My Horses to send you off to enjoy the rest of your day.
Goodbye, you Welsh and Irish lovebirds, and thank you for helping save civilization again.
All right.
Yeah, I could never get some other guy to just get picked on all the time. I had to marry him in order to do it. thanks a million. You're listening to We the People. You can find everything at wethepeopleradio.us.
Call me back at the local saloon. We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.